What's up, everyone? It's Brian, the producer of The Mark Haney Show. I want to start off by saying I hope that you and all of your family members are safe during these uncertain times. You're about to hear an episode from our new daily webinar series called Power of With. We put this together in light of recent events. We brought together all of the experts in our community to help give you resources and action steps that you can take today in order to survive during these uncertain times. If you'd like to catch the webinar live, you can find it on our website, haneybiz.com, under the events section. You can register. We go live every day at 2 p.m. We hope to see you there, and we know that we can get through this together.
We've been doing this Power of With series for entrepreneurs this last several days, and the stress level has been different for different people that have been on attending with us. Some, it's very high, like myself, but it sort of goes day by day. Yesterday, I was a little less stressed than I am today. I don't know if it has to do with the markets or not, but today we're lucky. We're going to be talking about really the legal aspects for how we are going to deal with this COVID-19 crisis. And today we are very fortunate to have my good buddies from Stoll Reeves, one of the top law firms in not just in the region, but across the country. And so we have their experts, their attorneys on the line. So this is really a chance for us to ask questions, listen to their presentation. And man, you are the ones that are, I'm sure, going to be very busy or are very busy in this, during this probably at least 180 days. I don't know how long this is going to last, but it's going to, I can picture you guys getting very, very busy. I have Rick as well. Rick Spencer, my right-hand man here, who's helping put this thing together. The vice president of Haney Biz. I know I want to make sure you know him. Rick, I think you have a couple of words to say before we launch this bad boy.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's been, great, the Power of With webinar series. We're coming on, I think, our eighth day of doing these daily, and it's just been great to see our community benefit from these topics. You know, we've covered everything from, finance and accounting last Friday with our accounting and CFO team, to real estate on Wednesday, to HR yesterday with Kim Silvers. But when you think about the priorities of these businesses, it's, I've got to conserve cash. I've got to look at my big expenses like real estate. I've got to take care of my people. And then what's the next big one? What are my legal requirements, right? Like, how do my contracts work? What is the opportunity for me to, work with both the people I'm contractually obligated to or vendors, et cetera. And so we could think of no one better than our community partner, Stoll Reeves, to help answer this question. And so Chris Russell, who's a partner with Stoll Reeves, a longtime supporter of Haney Biz, and his colleagues, Hunter and Henry, have joined us today to present on this topic. We will be recording this, so we'll be able to share this afterwards, both in our YouTube channel as well as our podcast channels. Also, on the bottom of your screen, you'll see an icon that says Q&A. So if you have any questions throughout our webinar today, just go ahead and click on that Q&A icon, submit your questions. We'll be able to answer most of those today. And if we don't get to any of them, we'll follow up afterwards. So without further ado, Chris, I'm going to share your presentation and we'll get into it.
Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Russell, and I'm a corporate attorney with the law firm of Stoll Reeves in our Sacramento office. We've been working with Haney Biz for the last couple of years, and they're a great partner. And this series is another thing that reason why we like to support Haney Biz is because they are innovative and out in front of people to provide services that are really essential for our community. And we appreciate Haney Biz and Mark and Rick for doing all this stuff. It's a great program.
Thank you, Chris. We really appreciate you as well.
Great. Just for those people who are not as aware of our firm, we have approximately 375 lawyers and offices in California, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Idaho, Alaska, Minnesota, and Washington, D.C. We are a full service firm and work with many clients in various industries. We have attorneys who focus on energy and natural resources, technology and emerging companies, real estate, life science, healthcare, and food, agriculture, and beverage, among others. With me on the panel, today's panel are Henry Chu and Hunter Ferguson. Henry is a real estate attorney in our Sacramento office, and Hunter is a litigator and privacy attorney in our Seattle office. Both Henry and Hunter have been involved in our firm's COVID-19 task force. For those of you who may be interested in legal issues being raised by this pandemic, we have a coronavirus resource hub on our website, which is www.stoe.com. In today's webinar, we will be principally addressing how actions taken by government bodies to address COVID-19 pandemic have affected certain businesses' ability to comply with their contractual obligations, and what remedies businesses may have available to them. As anyone who is following the news knows, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the U.S. economy in profound ways. Businesses have been required to shut down or adjust the way they conduct businesses, principally requiring employees to work from home. National, regional, and international entertainment and sporting events have been canceled, affecting businesses that depend upon these events, including, you know, our own NCAA tournament that was occurring in downtown Sacramento that passed, but also the NBA, the Kings shutting down, and on an international basis, we just learned the Olympics will be postponed. These have profound impacts on businesses in those areas that are affected by that. In addition, Morgan Stanley told clients to expect gross domestic product to plummet in the U.S. over 30% between April and June, which will trigger an increase in unemployment to an estimated 12.8%. Unemployment is rising at a faster rate than has ever been seen before. Yesterday, the government reported weekly unemployment claims jumped to 3.3 million. State and local governments have taken unprecedented actions to minimize the effect of this pandemic. However, these actions have forced bars, restaurants, gyms, and other types of businesses to close, and governments have required most people to work remotely like we're doing today. In California, cities and counties have been the leader in taking these actions. At last count, over 20 cities and counties have issued shelter-in-place orders, including Sacramento, Placer, and Yolo counties. These orders are not identical, but most follow a similar pattern set by the Bay Area cities and counties. People are required to remain in their homes unless they work for essential businesses or participating in essential activities. Nationally, most states have implemented some of these similar types of restrictions. The world as we knew it just a few weeks ago has been suspended and may never come back in the same way before. Businesses are forced to adapt to these very different environments. The way they conduct businesses have changed. As we noted, restaurants are now serving takeout of both food and cocktails on the street. And who would have thought that in California that would be selling cocktails on the street?
Yes.
We've received daily calls from clients asking what they could do with their employees. It's a tough time. As business has been disrupted, many companies may find themselves with contractual obligations that they no longer can perform. They may fall behind in rent, or they may no longer be able to provide certain products or services as they may have previously agreed to do in previous contracts before this pandemic occurred. So today, this afternoon we will primarily be discussing some remedies businesses may have if they can no longer fulfill their contractual obligations as a result of the COVID-19 actions that have been taken. Hunter will first generally discuss the government actions that have affected our region and nation. Then Henry will discuss certain types of remedies that may be available for those who can no longer perform their contracts. We will then briefly discuss how these remedies may be applied to certain types of contracts going forward. And afterwards, we've reserved some time, a lot of time for question and answering. And so we're here to answer your questions to the extent that we have on both these topics and other topics, legal topics you might have that's related to the actions we've been taking. So let's get started. Hunter, do you want to provide an overview on the actions the governments have taken to address COVID-19?
Sure. Thanks, Chris. And thanks to everyone for being here. Like Chris was saying, and we've all either experienced it firsthand or read about it or heard about it in the news in other places, the government actions that are being taken to flatten the curve or slow the spread, depending on what sort of catchphrase is employed, is basically to aimed at halting social interactions so that there are fewer opportunities for potential carriers of the virus to transmit it unknowingly. And what that basically has boiled down to is to effectively shut down wide swaths of our economy outside of spare bedrooms like the one I'm sitting in, or if you work for an essential business, what's deemed essential, those types of activities. And these rulings, these executive orders have varied from state to state, but they're basically following public health guidelines, whether from the WHO, from Dr. Anthony Fauci at the National Institutes of Health or our own CDCs, but also state and local public health departments, aimed at limiting interpersonal contact unless necessary. And so the basic way to think about these orders, to the extent that there has been a shelter in place or stay-at-home order issued, is that they apply broadly to everyone and to all types of economic activities, unless your particular business or an individual's particular job falls into one of the exceptions. And this is a sort of a broad brush explanation. There are going to be slight differences in different states, different counties, but essentially activities that are deemed essential. And these range everything from garbage pickup to at the front lines, healthcare workers, people who run grocery stores, any stores where food, grocery products are sold. The idea behind the orders seems to be to keep the backbone of our economy and our public services functioning and operating, but to limit areas of activity that are not absolutely necessary for maintaining something that resembles normal economic and social life. And so that then raises a lot of challenges, because for folks who are practicing law or in other types of information or knowledge jobs, it's not uncommon to work remotely. We always joke that all we need is an internet connection. We can kind of work from anywhere. But for people who actually have to be on job sites, be at specific locations, dealing with customers, clients, patients face-to-face, that obviously doesn't work. And so what we're seeing on the legal front is a lot of questions that companies, businesses have about, well, what do I do now that I can't get my supplies from a contracting partner? Or if a business itself is the one responsible for providing some type of services or delivering goods, and it can't do so because its supply chain is restricted or its workforce is unavailable, what should be done? And so that's where these questions about what clauses, what protections are there in contracts, and then more generally speaking, what can companies do on a practical level to maintain smooth operations? And so I think with that, to give a more granular overview before we go to Q&A, kick it over to Henry to talk about those types of issues.
Perfect. Thanks, Hunter. And thank you for the Haney Biz community for having us on today. As both Chris and Hunter have mentioned, in the past few weeks, there's been a large number of executive and local orders that have been enacted that provide that non-essential services must remain closed. So say you're a small business owner in Sacramento, you're forced to operate in a very limited capacity, or you're forced to shut down altogether. So what do? I mean, you're still required to make rent payments under your lease. You're still required to perform your obligations under your various contracts. So what gives? So the first thing you want to do is you want to enlist the help of your attorney or your person reviewing your contracts for your business to see what your contract says about your specific situation. Chances are there's not going to be much. And that's where this whole idea of this force majeure provision comes in. And you may have heard a lot about force majeure in the past few days. The force majeure provision is very common and is pretty standard in commercial agreements. And sometimes you may have heard it being referred to as an act of God provision in a commercial contract. Basically what it is it's a provision in a contract that excuses or delays performance in the event of an unanticipated event that occurs that impacts your ability to perform under your contract. Typically these unanticipated events are covered in the actual provision itself. So you want to make sure you do a close and careful read of your actual contract provision, because courts tend to take a very narrow stance in these unanticipated events. So to the extent that it's not listed as an unanticipated event in your contract, you may not be able to rely on this force majeure provision to excuse performance. So you definitely want to do a close review of your contract there. And so, I mean, some of the events that are generally covered as an unanticipated event in these force majeure provisions include government orders, wars, earthquakes, riots, things of that nature. And I can almost bet that it's not going to specifically refer to COVID-19 or the pandemic that we're facing now. But from moving from this day forward, I guarantee you that all the contract attorneys out there are going to have a provision in the force majeure section in their contract that provides for COVID-19. And so for any delay that's arising from COVID-19, it's going to be, they're going to try to get that excused. And so I want to give you a real life example of exactly how this plays out. So we recently had a client in the Bay Area who had a lease, who signed up in for a lease, and they had a certain build out period embedded in their lease. So they were working, they got the lease signed up, they were working on construction, and then there was a shelter in place order that came down from one of the Bay Area counties. And so the construction was halted. And as you can guess, there was a notice from the contractor that said, "Hey, look, there's a shelter in place order. We can't do any work here. So sorry, we're packing up and we can't do any work." And so our client was kind of in a bind in the sense that, you know, the construction stopped, but, you know, we had our obligation to the landlord to continue to perform the constructions and to perform under the lease. And so basically what we did there is we relied on the contract, and we went and reviewed the contract to see exactly what our rights were. And so we went and saw that there was a force majeure provision because we prepared the contract. And so typically we make sure to have that in every commercial contract that we draft. And so we did a close look, and it looked like we were able to rely on one of the provisions there. So we send out a letter to the other side just saying, "Hey, look, there's a force majeure event. We're reserving our rights to rely on this provision." And so at this point in time, we're waiting for a response back. And that's how it's been playing out in the real life sector.
Can I jump in there? Because yeah, I think there's a lot of contracts out there that probably don't have that language. Thoughts on dealing with it? Obviously, we want to look at the entire contract and look for some other thing. Maybe we can get to, maybe that's at the end. I don't know how much longer you have going, but I'm thinking there's a lot of people that have contracts that they're going to need to negotiate. That probably don't have that provision.
That was a good segue to the next section.
Okay, Mark, great. So
there you go, Henry.
Yeah, perfect segue, Mark. So what's going on is, so that's a force majeure provision. And typically that's only the provision that's been implicated with all this COVID-19 stuff that's been going on. And like you mentioned, some of these contracts do not have that provision. So what do you do in the case where your contract does not have that provision? You want to look into common law remedies and defenses. And so what that basically means is that there's a doctrine in California called the doctrine of impossibility, and another one called the frustration of purpose. And as its name suggests, it's basically saying to the extent that an event becomes impossible due to an unforeseen event, you're excused from performance, or it may delay the performance. And so typically parties can rely on this or try to rely on this, but the burden is always falls on the party that's trying to be excused.
What's it called? Is that listed on your slide here? I'm looking at impossibility, basically. Yeah. Okay.
There we go. So impossibility is listed there. You might be able to fall on that, but the burden is very high. You have to show that, you know, the event that you're trying to, the obligations are rendered impossible due to the circumstances and the unforeseen events that are happening. And so that's one thing that you can rely on. But just note that, you know, in order to avail yourself of this remedy, you would have to go to court, seek a judgment, and say that, okay, well, you know, this event makes it impossible for me to perform under my contract. So that could be potentially very costly and expensive, and it could take a long time. So a better solution would be to possibly work with the landlord from a business perspective to say, try to cut down the rent a little bit. Because I mean, it makes sense for the landlord too, especially in this climate that we're in now, to work something out with you rather than to try to, you know, to evict you or to try to get a new tenant in the place, because it's going to be really hard to do that in this current climate.
We had somebody on in real estate the other day, and we went through that a little bit, but let's play this out. Let's say you work out something and you still can't make the payments because of this impossibility. And you say you take them to court versus they're probably already taking you to court, right? You're going to get the eviction notice and so on. And if you just stay there, what happens? Do they end up taking you to court? How do they end up removing you from the premises?
Right. So that brings up a really good point, because I mean, because of that very issue, a lot of people are confused and they don't know exactly what to do. And we haven't been confronted too much with that as of yet, just because the fact that, you know, all these orders went down, I think a couple weeks ago, 1 or 2 weeks ago, after March payments have already been made. But say, you know, April 1st is coming right around the corner. So people are getting worried in terms of what's going to actually happen. Are tenants going to actually not pay the rent? So landlords are kind of in this place. They're in this standstill position where they're kind of just waiting and seeing exactly how it's going to play out. Other situations, like the city of Sacramento, has taken a proactive approach. And to prevent all of that, they've actually extended an order that I think it was passed on an ordinance on Tuesday or Wednesday, where they're preventing evictions, commercial evictions, if due to COVID-19, a party is unable to pay rent. And so chances are between now and April 1st, we're going to be seeing that a lot from our local communities, cities, counties, just so we could get ahead. Because, I mean, April 1st rolls around, there's going to be a bunch of parties that are not going to be able to pay rent, perform their obligations, and everyone's going to throw their hands up in their end and say, what do we do?
Question on that. So let's a local municipality can do that. The landlord is sitting there making their loan payment. Obviously, there's nothing there to stop the bank from foreclosing. So on the building, if they stop paying their mortgage.
Right, and that's the flip side of the coin, where and I think, in enacting the ordinance, it was an 8-1 vote. And the point that you raised was raised by the one person that dissented with the passage of the ordinance there. They said, what did the landlords do? You know, we're helping out all these tenants here, but the landlords may have to pay a mortgage and they're going to be in default too.
I think the principle is that they don't want people to be thrown out. So, I mean, the city governments and the governments are weighing. I mean, this was originally only applying to residential leases, but then more and more issues are coming up with commercial leases, and the city is weighing the factors, like, do we want to throw out this business and all the potential people that might generate business in the future, mm-hmm. you know, and so they're weighing those factors, and the governments are going to come to a conclusion. I mean, like, for instance, there was a El Dorado, you know, the city of El Dorado was considering doing something similar. They did not take actions as it relates to tenant residential leases, but now it's back up before the city council.
Okay.
At Elk Grove. So these are the factors that cities are weighing.
So it's unfolding. There may be something coming down the in the future that's going to protect the landlord as well. We just don't know yet.
Right. Henry, you want to continue on, or is there?
I mean, that pretty much sums it up. I mean, the frustration is purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. So if let's say time is over, right? They give us an extension. If I'm a renter, if I'm a tenant, I get this extension where I can't be evicted for some period of time. That will end at some point. It's not going to last. It's not going to be indefinite. But it's still the coronavirus, made it impossible for me to do business. I guess I'm wondering, the normal thing, you say it costs a lot of money to take legal action. Is it better to wait for someone to take legal action against you and then respond back? Is that kind of how it is versus you going on the offensive? How does that work? Who initiates the legal action typically in an event like that, in an eviction?
Well, generally, I think, do you guys want to take this, or is it okay if I take this one?
Go ahead.
Yeah, is there anything, what can we do proactively besides try to negotiate as a tenant?
Right, well, typically, I think an action like that would be initiated by the landlord, because they're going to try to evict the tenant, and then the tenant's going to say, hey, look, we have a defense here. It was impossible, or, you know, my purpose of being in the lease itself was frustrated because of all these events arising from COVID-19. So typically it would be landlord initiated. However, I have seen some advice out there saying that some tenants should be on the proactive approach and say, hey, why don't we file a declaratory action and say, this is the reason why we're not going to pay rent. But here's the landlord's perspective on this as well. So the tenant's going to spend all this money for litigation costs to try to say, okay, this is the reason why I'm not going to pay rent. But from the landlord's perspective, they're saying, well, you have all this money to spend on legal fees to not pay rent, then you could pay your rent. Right, you know what right. I mean? So it probably makes sense from a logistical standpoint to probably work with the landlord and the tenant in this situation to come with a compromise or to reduce the rent for a bit, because it helps out both parties.
Okay.
The rent and landlord is just one aspect of it. If a couple slides down, it'll show some other types of contracts that are out there, including lease. There are construction contracts. And as Henry had noted in his initial example, these construction contracts are also implicated by this, because they have these orders to provide services. And when either they or their suppliers can't provide the services they need, they're in a potential breach situation. And this is different from the landlord-tenant situation where who's initiating action, because here you have construction contractors who may very well have the ability to make payments, but they can't actually do the work because of the orders that are in place. And so the negotiation piece is a little bit more balanced at that point in time. But Hunter, do you have any thoughts on the construction contracts? I know that you've worked through a couple of these issues.
So I want to step back for a second and kind of pick up on points that both Chris and Henry just made, but give some sort of big guideposts. I think the things to keep in mind when you're thinking about whether to invoke a force majeure clause, thinking about whether to initiate a lawsuit to get relief from a court, or whether you're thinking about, the possible need to defend on a claim, are basically the following. Force majeure clauses, kind of a rule of thumb, should sort of be a measure of last resort. There's always an overriding obligation to perform the contract, whatever is required under the contract, if you can. And that's true whether you're a tenant paying rent, you're an owner who's providing property for lease, you're a contractor or a subcontractor building part of a large project, you're an owner, providing access, so on and so forth. So the objective should always be to perform. And the reason why I want to emphasize that force majeure is a last resort is, in order to actually invoke the clause, party to a contract would need to be able to demonstrate that performance is actually rendered impossible by some external event or action or it's impracticable, meaning that the cost or the resources that would be required to perform under the conditions are just nothing that anyone ever contemplated, and you know, there's no realistic way to actually get it done. And the reason why I'm emphasizing all this is both parties to a contract always have sort of an overriding duty to mitigate their losses. And so that means that if you're a party that is technically not able to perform according to the terms of the contract, you have to make sure that you're doing everything you can to lessen the damage or the harm caused to the other party. On the flip side of that coin, if you're the owner, the buyer, whoever it might be, that you're also taking steps to mitigate your losses. So that means that if someone can't deliver components, can't deliver perishable produce, whatever it might be, have you taken steps to find another resource? So let's give an example here of that's real life, not kind of contrived and made up. But we have a situation where a lot of service companies that rely on a workforce, the question would be whether they can provide the services if their workers are being told to stay at home and they don't meet the qualifications of an essential business. Or let's say you maybe have a situation where a business activity might qualify as essential, but the employees or workers who would otherwise execute the services, they're scared and nervous about coming to work because they either don't want to catch the virus or maybe they're concerned that they might spread it and don't want to hurt other people. The best thing to do in these situations, practically speaking, is always going to be to communicate and make sure that the communications are well documented. So if you're on the performance side of things and you're not sure you're going to be able to deliver on time, let your contracting party know what's going on. Tell him or her or the business what's going on so you can try to work out an alternative. You also put the other party on notice so they know that if you're not going to be able to perform on time, is there an alternative that they can turn to? Or maybe you'll be able to work out some sort of set of new terms. So those are kind of the big picture kind of guideposts. I think the last thing any business wants to face coming out of this is lawsuits that are rehashing what went on during the pandemic precautions. They are going to happen. They inevitably do. Become more and more acquainted with legal decisions after the 1918 flu pandemic than I ever imagined I would. And we're going to see that coming out of this. But the best way to prepare for that, again, is I think to make every effort to follow through and then be able to demonstrate, why or why not something was impossible. And then always, always communicate, communicate, communicate. Want to sort of mention one thing that was talked about earlier. Courts do take a pretty narrow view of these force majeure clauses. They're not invoked very regularly. There were some certainly that came out of the Northridge earthquake, the Bay Area earthquake during the World Series. And then, we've seen some coming out of the rash of really horrible wildfires the past few years. But the best thing to do is when confronted with external circumstances that really are imposing huge burdens on all parties to a contract, is to come to your contracting parties and with proposed solutions, recognizing that the way that the contract anticipated the performance, it's just not really possible anymore because of changed conditions, and try to work out some sort of new arrangement. I think that you know, we'd be surprised, I think pleasantly, that most parties to a contract will be open to finding solutions rather than necessarily just standing firm, you know, and trying to stand behind whatever rights they have in an agreement, which there's a time and a place to do that. And that time and place may be now, but I think most parties to a contract enter into them with the objective of having a smooth and productive relationship. And if that just isn't possible because of the external circumstances, it's a good opportunity to try to work out some kind of a new term. I think, are we at the end of our slides?
I think. Yeah, I think we're ready for a question and answer. If anybody has.
Just open it up and have a general discussion.
Okay, so let me think what's on a lot of people's mind is I'm worried about running out of money. Right now, and I'm saying I have 3 months, 6 months, 12 months of runway, and I'm cutting, and I have to preserve all that cash as much as possible. So I want to renegotiate today, but I do have cash. I could pay it, but I've got to hoard cash because I owe many, many people, and you know, how do I approach this thing not knowing that this could last a while. I don't know if my people are going to, I don't know if I'm going to get paid from my customers. So you want to be as careful as you can because with paying your suppliers or your landlord, because you're preserving cash.
Yeah. I mean, just generally speaking, I mean, that's going to be a problem. I mean, people that everybody faces. I mean, it's, you would look at it in a contract by, I mean, for purposes of the analysis of what we put together today on a contract by contract basis, you would have to show that your inability to perform is directly related to the, you know, what's happening here, just because business, I mean, and that could be a broad, I mean, it could be.
Yeah. That's probably almost everybody right now, right? So there seem I could throw everybody who's not delivering food or one of these essential services is, even some of the essential services, as you guys mentioned, are probably going to have some cash flow issues. So that's kind of the interesting dilemma, is how much to get into these conversations now when there's so much unknown.
Right. I mean, like, I was on a board call with one of my clients who was in the food, you know, provides a lot of food food across the country to various different parties. And, you know, what they found in their business was that a lot of the their service, their grocery store business is off the charts. But the other part of their business, which is providing foods to service industries like restaurants and such like that, is completely down. And so they're negotiating with each. I mean, they're, as a party, would have an interest in preserving those contractual obligations. I mean, this would be like the landlord in the context. This is the big, they would be the big party here. But they're interested in maintaining these relationships. And it should be in most people's interest, in both parties' negotiating interest, is to recognize the issues and to find a path, because they want to keep, you know, we're all hoping that this is going to be a short-term process and that we're going to get back to normal. And so we want to maintain our relationships that we have now, and that's helping to preserve the contractual flow of business. If nobody thought we were going to have any future business, everybody would be terminating all these agreements and be walking away. But we are under a circumstance of economic pressures now where most people view this as a process that's caused by the pandemic. And once we get it under control, that businesses will start to open back up and the supply will start coming back in again. And so for the most part, people should understand the pressures that are coming, and it's facing everybody. And so both parties have an interest in trying to preserve these relationships.
I heard a term today, and I don't know if you know this one, Chris, or any of you guys, default alive, whereby you're going to continue to stay in business, early stage company, you're going to stay in business, but you're going to declare something called default and alive as you scale down your expenses. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that?
Default? I haven't heard that term.
Okay.
But
okay. Do we have audience questions? Okay. So what the next thing that comes in mind in these situations, we aren't there yet, but I want to kind of fast forward a little bit as we start figuring out preservation of cash, to preserve our business and then ultimately to preserve our personal net worth. If we have, keep from, some of these contracts causing us, damage in our personal life so that they, take some of our holdings, some of our personal belongings and so on. People are thinking about things like Chapter 11. They're thinking, some kind of relief where you can restructure. At what stage do you begin thinking about that as a real possibility?
Hunter, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, no one likes to, this is not a popular topic. It doesn't give anyone warm and fuzzies, but the reality is that we are going to start to see that and experience it. And so as a increasingly probable event, we should plan for it. I think what Chris was saying just a moment ago, it's really a question for an economist. I mean, there's a legal answer to everything, which is, this is the best thing you can do legally in this context. But I think, Mark, what you're driving at is these questions sort of go beyond just how is any particular contract interpreted or what are my rights under a particular statute. We're really seeing that the interconnectedness of our economic lives and how bits of pressure over on strands of a spider web here have major consequences elsewhere. So, I want to be an evangelist. People should really start to understand and try to take advantage of the stimulus package that just passed the House of Representatives this morning without any changes to what was passed in the Senate. It should be signed into law. It's a huge bill. Information is going to trickle out over time, but the objective of it is essentially to use the power of the nation state, the Federal Reserve, to offer a giant life preserver afloat for the national economy. And so there are a lot of provisions under SBA loans, as well as unemployment assistance. There's some thresholds in terms of annual income and tax brackets as to which individuals will receive cash payments from the government as a kind of a lifeline. And so what I would advocate is take the time to learn about what's available and make sure that you use every opportunity you have to take advantage. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is you spend some time applying for a part of the relief and for some reason it doesn't come through. But make every effort to take advantage of what is being offered, understand what you're getting yourself into. But that's an obvious resource because with the effective stay-at-home orders, a lot of other avenues are shut down. That would be my most immediate recommendation.
Absolutely. In fact, Haiti Biz, Rick will probably talk about it at the end. We have a crisis plan that we're putting together, customizing it for small businesses that'll help direct them in some of those areas and help them look at their numbers. Because a lot of it right now is you got to see what your numbers are and see how much time you have and, make a plan. But sometimes that plan is extreme conservation of cash. So that's why I asked that question. Do we have any questions in the audience, Rick?
Chris, to you specifically, because I know, you're managing a lot of the early stage company activity for the firm. And so, you know, you do a lot of support for early stage companies with term sheets and, you know, getting them through the deal flow process. What have you seen as far as activity with deals that were close to being closed or were in the pipeline? You're on mute, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually working on trying to close a Series A1 financing now. I mean, basically what I've seen is that people who, I mean, as long as you have the purview that this is a, you're going to be, you know, we're going to be coming out of this at a relatively short period of time. I think people who had transactions were still, are still proceeding with those transactions. We've done a couple investments in this last week. But that said, I mean, you know, the other flip side of that is that the when the market hit the value of everybody's holdings, I mean, I worked with some people who are trying to raise some funds, you know, raise a fund, and those people are holding off on approaching potential investors in the fund until the market gets somewhat recovered, because it's hard to go ask them for, you know, a big chunk of money when they've lost a big chunk of money.
And one thing that I've, hey, Rick, on that question. So Haney Biz is an investor. We were in the process of a pretty significant transaction, and the acquirer backed out on, it wasn't very long ago, right? And it was maybe within the last week or so. So I've seen at least two or three in my inner circle fall out, but I can tell you that we're closing on three or four this week and last week because the commitments were already out there. So I think a lot of people are looking at this opportunity to sort of retrade, right? So you are in a little bit stronger position if you've got the, you know, if you've got the money right now. And so the thought, you know, always crosses one's mind is this, do I still want to do this? And much of that comes down to the investor or the lender and keeping their commitment. But we're going to keep our commitments on three or four of them, you know, this week.
And, and where it really has come into play, even in the transactions that we've been working on, is that, you know, some of these, you know, fundable venture venture-backed companies, you know, they might have had multiple different types of offers coming out, and they could play against each other. And so now when we're in the, when the process of doing this one transaction, we know I'm working with the client and we know there's really a short window of time in which we have to get cash in the door. And then two, there's not a lot of other options outstanding. And so the terms that we're negotiating now are maybe a little bit more favorable to the investor than what would have happened even, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Another question, thank you, Chris. Another question that came up, and you know, Mark, you mentioned about our crisis action plan program that we launched is on our website. We were working with one of the companies that is going through that program today, and they mentioned, you know, their internet provider saying, "Hey, you know, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but if you don't pay, we're not going to shut off your internet, right?" And so. Why that relates to this is that normally attorneys would say documents, right? But I wonder in this, you know, crisis, you know, in examples like that of expense reductions, you know, should you make like a partial payment and like not document, or what are your thoughts on communication and documentation with vendors to help with this expense management, expense reduction, you know, process?
I'll take a cut out, and if anybody else has any thoughts on it too, they can. But my general thought is, you know, this is you're dealing with a contract here. So even if it's if you're modifying the term somewhat, it's always better to have it documented. Like I work with a client just this morning who had made a loan to one of its portfolio companies. And they wanted to defer payment for, you know, a period of time. And we documented that because we wanted it, we wanted to be clear exactly what was agreed to and that it didn't cover more. Like, for instance, if you are waiving performance on, you know, basically you have this contractual agreement where someone's agreeing to perform, and you say, well, okay, I will agree that you don't have to perform this period of time, but I'm only applying this waiver to this period of time and not to any other potential things. Because if you leave things just in the course of business, people could come up and say, wait, listen, we went through this process last year, and that could evolve into a potential claim that this is how you've modified your agreement is through this course. So you want to be clear what the parties are agreeing to and what they're not agreeing to.
Hunter, Henry, anything to add?
That's exactly right. I can't think of any reason not to document precisely and clearly. There's so many pitfalls and traps that emerge when that's not done. And I think Chris hit the nail on the head right there.
Great.
You guys are obviously, we all have to be a little careful what we say. We don't want to break anybody's confidence right now. We want people to be forward leaning. I think that some days we're a little more high on optimism. Other days we're low. I have this sense it's going to get a little bit worse before maybe a lot worse. I sent out a feeler to some of the entrepreneurs that I really respect, and I think to a person, all of them are saying, buckle up, it's going to be a little bit of a ride. So I do think in many cases, this is a time to maybe double buckle and get yourself ready. You want to have the right legal, you got to know who you're going to call as stuff hits the fan, right? As things hit the fan, you do need to have some of that in place, whether it be in finance, in legal, these different areas of these people that can sort of help walk you back from a bad decision or guide you into a plan that can help you make the decision that helps keep you alive. So I think at this point, cooler heads prevail, stay calm, carry on. I mean, that's my words. That's what I'm hearing from my entrepreneurial friends. And I want to make sure that the community sort of feels that. Look, we're going to get through this. We're better together. And don't panic, stay strong, and really use this time to really come up with a plan. Any closing thoughts from our friends at Stoll? You guys, by the way, thank you. You guys, there aren't that many times when you can ask, it looks like we have one more question. I don't know if that still exists there, but we have free legal advice, right? This is really cool. And I have to be careful what I ask because I don't want to ask on behalf of one of my companies. I want people to stay optimistic, and cash is king. Save your cash as long as you possibly can.
No, I mean, I don't have any further further comments on this, but it's been it's wonderful that you guys put this on, and we've been, you know, we're always help. Ready to help if people have any questions. You can talk to Haney Biz. They can give us our contact information. We'd be glad to respond to these things as well. So we're available to the community if they have general questions that need
Thanks.
To be answered.
Thanks, Henry. Thanks, Hunter.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, guys. I just echo Mark's statement. You know, I don't think a lot of people associate courage with attorneys, but for you guys to show up today and talk about something that is unprecedented, and to talk about legal ramifications of that, I think does take courage. And so thank you for that. Thank you for investing the time and educating us and providing this advice. It's just such a tremendous asset to our community. So we couldn't be more grateful. This has been recorded, so we'll be sharing it. If there's information that you learned that was helpful, please share it with others. As Mark mentioned too, Haney Biz has come out with our Crisis Action Plan program. It's on our website now. So take advantage of that. Use some of our financial experts and executive experts to help you come up with a customized, individualized action plan. So with that said, we'll be back here. Take the weekend off, relax a little bit, recharge And we'll be back Monday at 2 p.m. And with some more advice and resources for response to this crisis. So thanks again to Stoll Reeves. Thank you to all our attendees. And we'll see you again Monday. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.